Testing in the House chamber, Legislative Day 18.
This morning's prayer will be offered by Representative Ward. We'd ask everyone on the floor to please stand for the prayer, as well as our guests in the gallery, and to remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance thereafter. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pray with me, please. Almighty God and Father, you prayed that all might be one, not the same but one, not one party, not one race, not one singular interest. Rather, let us be of one heart, one mind, and one desire to serve you and place nothing above or before you. May our desire to serve you and enable us to see you in the faces of those that we are called to serve. Help us to realize that in service to our people, we are serving you. Help us to see you in every age and every stage of life among those that created in your image and likeness. We'll thank you for it all. In the name of Christ, amen.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The gentleman from Onslow, Representative Cleveland, is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for February 21st has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it be approved as written.
Representative Cleveland moves the journal for February 21st be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Petitions, memorials, or papers addressed to the General Assembly of the House, the clerk will read.
State of North Carolina, the Honorable Tim Moore. Dear Speaker Moore, pursuant to NC General Statutes 97-77A1, I am pleased to nominate Mr. Philip A. Barber III for Wake County for reappointment to the North Carolina Industrial Commission for terms beginning on May 1st, 2023, and hereby submit the name for confirmation by the General Assembly. I am grateful for Mr. Barber's willingness to assume this important responsibility for the state of North Carolina. Please feel free to call my staff for any additional information. Sincerely, Roy Cooper. State of North Carolina, the Honorable Tim Moore. Dear Mr. Speaker, pursuant to NC General Statute 96-15.3C, I am pleased to nominate Teresa B. Stevenson of Wake County for reappointment for North Carolina Employment Security Board of Review for a term beginning on July 1st, 2023, and hereby submit her name for confirmation by the General Assembly. I'm grateful for Ms. Stevenson's willingness to assume this important responsibility for the state of North Carolina. Please feel free to call my staff for any additional information. Sincerely, Roy Cooper.
Noted, and the correspondence will be placed on file in the Office of the House Principal Clerk. Introduction to bills, resolutions, the clerk will read.
Representatives Gillespie, Clampett, Brendan Jones, and Lowry, House Bill 153, use tribal ID for alcohol and tobacco purchase.
Federal Relations and American Indian Affairs, a favorable rules calendar and operations of the House.
Representatives Amber Baker, Lambert, and Katina, House Bill 154, Forsyth, United Way Summer Learning Funds.
Appropriations of favorable rules calendar and operations of the House.
Representative Sassaman, Neil Jackson, and Biggs. House Bill 155, authorize all-terrain vehicles and utility vehicle title.
Transportation of favorable rules calendar and operations of the House.
Representatives Clemens, Hardister, Quick, and Harrison. House Bill 156. Establishing safe culture funds.
Appropriations of favorable rules counter and operations of the House.
Representative Destin Hall, House Joint Resolution 157, State of the State Invitation.
Pursuant to Rule 32, the Chair puts that on the calendar for today.
Representative Sasser, House Bill 158, Stanley Community College Contract Date and Multi-Campus Center for Status.
Education Community College is a favorable rules calendar and operations of the House.
Representatives Charles Smith, Francis Jackson, Lucas, and Wheatley. House Bill 159, adopt official NC Dogwood Festival.
State government, a favorable rules calendar and operations of the House.
Representative Plather, Ager, and Rudow. House Bill 160, school calendar flexibility, Buncombe and Asheville.
Education K-12, if favorable rules calendar and operations of the House.
Representative Stevens, House Bill 161, protecting properly insured individuals.
Judiciary 2, if favorable rules calendar and operations of the House.
Representative Shepard, Moray, Fontenelle, and Wheatley. House Bill 162, Living Donor Protection Act.
Health, if favorable finance, if favorable rules calendar and operations of the House.
Representative Tyson, House Bill 163, school calendar flexibility, Craven County.
Education K-12, if favorable rules calendar and operations of the House.
Representatives Rydell and Ross, House Bill 164, Burlington Alamance Regional Airport Funds.
Appropriations of favorable rules calendar and operations of the House.
Representatives Morey, Autry, Gloris Dean Brown, and Harrison. House Bill 165, make corporations pay their fair share.
Rules calendar and operations of the House. Members present to the notice sent out yesterday, we will not be taking votes this morning. There will be votes this afternoon, as members can see from the calendar and the dashboard. There's quite a few bills that will be on today's calendar. And so we will start as close to 2:30 as we can. That will be our time to reconvene this afternoon. Do we have any notices or announcements at this time? Anything from the court? All right, seeing none, the chair is going to declare that the House stand in recess, subject to the stipulations of Rule 15.1, until 2:30 this afternoon.
Representative Stevens is recognized to send forth the Judiciary 2 Committee Report. House Bill 10 requires sheriffs to cooperate with ICE. Favorable and re-referred. House Bill 10 will be re-referred to the Committee on Rules Counter Operations of the House. Representative Bell and Pless are recognized to send forth the Committee Report for the Committee on Disaster Recovery and Homeland Security. House Bill 119, NCORR, increase informal bid threshold. Favorable and re-referred. House Bill 119, referred to the Committee on Rules Counter Operations of the House. Representative Davis recognized, sent forth Judiciary 1 Committee Report. House Bill 103, GSC, technical corrections, 2023. Favorable and re-referred. House Bill 103, referred to the Committee on Rules. House Bill 104, GSC, UNIF, UNREG, Child Custody Trafficking Act, Article 3. Favorable and re-referred. House Bill 104, re-referred to the Committee on Rules Counter Operations of the House. And House Bill 131, Protect NC Education Savings and Investment Accounts. Favorable committee substitute, unfavorable original bill, and re-referred. Original bill will be placed on the unfavorable calendar, whereas the committee substitute for House Bill 131 will be referred to the Committee on Rules Counter Operations of the House. Representative Dixon and McNeely are recognized to set forth Agriculture Committee Report. House Bill 67, encourage healthy NC food in schools. Favorable committee sub, unfavorable original bill, and re-referred original bill placed on the unfavorable calendar, whereas committee substitute for House Bill 67, referred to the Committee on Education, K-12.
The House will come to order. Members, before we move to our calendar, the chair is going to recognize the gentleman from Union, Representative Arp, who's authorized to send forth a representative statement. That representative statement will be read in its entirety upon the adjournment today, but at this time, the chair is going to recognize Representative Arp to speak briefly to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As a licensed professional engineer who has had the privilege of being an elected member of this august body, I'd like to speak on a representative statement recognizing this week as National Engineers Week in North Carolina. Mr. Speaker, today we have several distinguished guests in the gallery, two in particular that helped shape the next generation of engineers in the state. We have from NC State University, Dean Louis Martin Vega, the Dean of Engineering at NC State University. In his almost 17 years at the helm, Dean Martin Vega has done a magnificent job of building on the excellent program there and making it one of the premier engineering colleges of the 21st century. He's retiring from his leadership post at the end of the school year. Additionally, we have from Western Carolina, we have Dean Randy Collins, who's just begun at the College of Engineering. He came to Western from Clemson University last year and has a great vision for the future of engineering education in North Carolina. All are here to acknowledge and celebrate the National Engineers Week in North Carolina. So, Mr. Speaker, at the appropriate time, I'd like the House to join with me in thanking Dean Martin Vega for his outstanding service to the state and all of our distinguished guests and honored guests here.
And what we'll do at this time on motion of Representative Arp, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to some special guests. If you'd stand when your name's called. We have with us today Pam Townsend, who is with the Professional Engineers of North Carolina, fellow of the NC State Distinguished Engineering Alum, Brian Johnson, PENC Executive Committee, Vice President of the Wooten Company, Dennis Hoyle, Chair of the Board, North Carolina Board of Examiners for Engineers and Surveyors, Tony Withers, Executive Director of the NC Society of Engineers, Don Chandler, President of the NC Society of Engineers, John Adams, Senior Vice President, WSP, a global engineering firm, some other members from PENC, Kevin Valacorsa with Siemens Energy, Jack Kausert of ECS Southeast, and then from our colleges and universities, as referenced earlier by Representative Arp, we have on the floor Dean Louis Martin Vega, who is the Dean of Engineering at NC State, has been for 17 years and is going to be retiring here very soon. And then Dean Randy Collins, who is the Dean of Engineering at Western Carolina University. Would y'all please join me in welcoming these fine folks with us today. The members were also honored to be joined by a number of members of local government, of city council, town council members, and mayors who are with us. If you're here as a local elected official, would you please stand so that we could welcome you with us today to the General Assembly? Got quite a few here today, so thanks. And also, the youngest group visiting with us today, we have a group of students who are here with us from Dilworth Elementary School in Charlotte, and I think your representative is Representative Mary Belk, who's right there. So would y'all please stand? I want to welcome y'all, and thank you for being with us today. And customarily, when school groups come, the Representative Belk, should buy you ice cream or whatever it is you want while you're here today. So, for our purpose, Jim from Union, Representative Arp Rice.
I wanted a few more remarks about the Engineering Week, if I can.
Jim was recognized.
Engineers Week is celebrated by a broad coalition of groups from all over the country. In North Carolina, we have a long history of engineering education and practice. 100 years ago, the School of Engineering was formed at NC State. That same year, the state formed the North Carolina Board of Examiners for Engineers and Surveyors to uphold professional standards in the field. So this year marks the 100th year anniversary for both of those institutions. And most critically, it was formed to protect the public health and safety and welfare and maintain a high standard of integrity, skills, and practice in the profession of engineering and land surveying. At their core, engineers care about people. It's in their DNA. Engineering is sometimes called the invisible or stealth profession because so much of the work engineers do is behind the scenes where no one sees, and maybe until something goes wrong, and that the importance of good engineers to a good society is unmistakable. Engineering is important work, designing the bridges and roads and power plants and water treatment plants that we all take for granted every day. Engineers play a key role in responding to the natural disasters and technological challenges of the time. It's essential that we encourage our best and brightest to consider the profession of engineering and that we support engineering education programs that will help them practice that profession at the highest levels. We are pouring millions and millions of dollars pursuing high-tech companies and attracting good-paying jobs and to persuade STEM-related companies to come to North Carolina. And we've been successful, and we will continue to be successful if we continue to invest in STEM workforce development and the successful output of STEM graduates, including women in STEM, to these companies. A recent report names North Carolina as the number 4 in STEM demand for companies coming here. Therefore, in conclusion, I hope you will support my motion to have this representative statement recognizing National Engineers Week in North Carolina, as well as the 100th anniversary of the School of Engineering at NC State and the North Carolina Board of Examiners for Engineers and Land Saver, and the retirement of Dean Louis Martin Vega, spread across the journal. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Members, we're going to move to our calendar. We start off actually with a number of local bills. All of the bills but for House Bill 115 can be grouped together. Is there objection to those bills being grouped together? Seeing no objection heard, the chair is going to direct Mr. Clark that House Bills 45, 73, 106, and 129 be grouped together. Clark will read those same bills.
Representatives Vidal and Ross, House Bill 45, Address Pandemic Learning Loss, Alamance County. Representative Tyson, House Bill 73, Town of Bridgeton, Charter Amendment. Representative Lambert, Cal Hall and Zinger, House Bill 106, School Calendar Flexibility, Various Local Education Authorities. Representatives Reeder and Glorstein Brown, House Bill 129, School Calendar Flexibility, Pitt County.
Any members wish to debate or discuss these bills? Seeing none, the question before the House is the passage of House Bills 45, 73, 106, and 129 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Is Representative Alexander on the floor today? Clerk will open machine, record the vote. 111 having voted in the affirmative, 2 in the negative. House Bills 45, 73, 106, and 129 passed second reading without objection. Be read third time.
General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bills 45, 73, 106, and 129 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bills 45, 73, 106, and 129 having passed their third reading, ordered sent to the Senate. House Bill 115, the clerk will read.
Representative Setzer, House Bill 115, School Calendar Flexibility. General Assembly, no clarinet.
Representative Brody is recognized. Send forth amendment ATC 12. Clerk will read.
Representative Brody moves to amend the bill.
Gentleman from Anson has the floor to debate the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, all this is doing is adding Anson County schools to the list that is already there, and ask for your support.
For what purpose, gentleman from Catawba? Representative
Speaker, on the amendment.
Gentleman is recognized.
We support the amendment, and we appreciate the fact all the good counties that are on this bill.
Further discussion and debate on the amendment? If not, the question before the House is the adoption of Amendment A1. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The amendment has been adopted. For what purpose does the gentleman from Nash, Representative Chesser, rise? Further discussion, further debate on the bill? If not, the question before the House is the passage of House Bill 115 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Quick, wish to vote. Representative Autry, Cotham, Alexander, Hardister. These members wish to vote on this bill. Representative Autry, does the gentleman wish to vote on the bill? Representative Cotham, does the lady wish to vote on the bill? Vice not. Clerk of Light Machine, record the vote. 111, having voted in the affirmative, 2 in the negative. House Bill 115 passes second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly, no clarinet.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 115 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 115, having passed third reading, is ordered engrossed and sent to the Senate. House Bill 2, the clerk will read.
Representative Warren, House Bill 2, extend deadline for expenditure of funds. General Assembly, no clarinet.
The gentleman from Rowan, Representative Warren, recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill simply extends the deadline of June 30th to September for the usage of a grant to the Rowan County Sheriff's Department. Would appreciate your support.
Further discussion, further debate. Not the question for the House. Passage of House Bill 2 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Gill, the lady would like to vote on this. Representative Arp, Representative Humphrey, Representative Wheatley. Clerk Lock Machine, record the vote. 114, having voted in the affirmative, none in the negative. House Bill 2 passes second reading without objection. Will be read a third time.
General Assembly, no clarinet.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 2 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 2, having passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. House Bill 29, the clerk will read.
Representatives Hastings, Bradford, Sane, and Paré, House Bill 29, a bill entitled Support Private Property Rights, General Assembly, North Carolina Act.
Gentleman from Gaston, Representative Hastings, recognized to debate the bill.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'll try to be brief. We've had this bill for about 6 years. The first year we had quite a bit of trouble with it, and then the next session people started understanding it a little bit better, and we had right at 100 votes. And then the two committees this session we've had strong votes. And I'll be very brief and just say what the bill is not. One, it is not a realtor protection bill, as some have characterized, because not all real estate licensees are realtors. And some transactions are just between parties without licensees involved. This bill also has support of the Association of Realtors, the Home Builders. The Real Estate Commission is okay with it because they can still discipline licensees, and the DOT Secretary is okay with it because they can still build road projects and other transportation projects. And I'll stand for any questions, but other than that, would appreciate everyone's support.
What purpose? The lady from New Hanover, Representative Butler Rice.
To speak to the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a bill that Representative Hastings and I have discussed many, many times, and it is one of those things that you really can't make a bad vote on. You're going to have to decide whether you think these transportation maps are material items for disclosure in a real estate transaction. This bill is not, I feel that I can vote for this bill for the sole purpose that the issue is that unless the project is on a fiscally constrained map, in other words, if the dollars are dedicated to it, this bill does not apply. If that were the case, it would be incumbent upon the broker or the seller to disclose that to a potential buyer. At the same time, however, having spoken to my division engineer, those projects that do appear on a comprehensive transportation plan, those are not just pie-in-the-sky transportation wish list kinds of things. There is data-driven, and if it appears on that sort of a map, it is something that they hope to accomplish at some point in the future. So I guess the question comes down to whether or not you want to put the burden of disclosure on the seller and the realtor or upon the buyer to determine whether or not the property that they are interested in buying finds itself on a comprehensive transportation plan. Now, that's kind of difficult to do. I've tried. If you look on these metropolitan planning organizations and rural transportation organizations' websites, it's really very confusing. And Representative Hastings and I have talked about this on a couple of occasions. We really should probably develop some sort of organized fashion for the buying public to find out whether or not a property that they are interested in purchasing is on any of these transportation maps. So he and I have agreed to work on that into the future. I'd like to be part of that because I think it's a real need. As for this bill, I think you can vote either way. I haven't decided yet, but when I sit down and you can look at the board, I'll let you know.
For what purpose does the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison Rice?
To briefly debate the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, anyone who has lived through the outer loop construction in Guilford County will understand why I'll be voting no on this bill. Representative John Boston and I attended many community meetings with very angry citizens who bought property out in what used to be the country of Guilford County and found out and were told there'd be this tiny Painter Boulevard possibly coming near the property, and Painter Boulevard turned into 740. And foundations crumbled, stormwater flooding problems, noise that couldn't be fixed by a noise wall because it didn't fit into the transportation restrictions on who qualifies for a noise wall. So from my perspective, we need more disclosure, not less. So I appreciate that Representative Hastings is working on this, and Representative Butler will work with him to possibly improve access to that. But for now, I think citizens really need to know more rather than less. So thank you.
For what purpose? Jump from Gaston, Representative Hastings Rice.
To debate for a second time?
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill a second time.
Yes, and also I wanted to clarify, I appreciate the questions that Representative Harrison and Representative Jones had, and it was about how does this bill protect a buyer? And, well, it protects a buyer in this way. It helps a buyer obtain title insurance. So if you have a ready, willing, and able seller and a ready, willing, and able buyer, this simply helps the buyer be able to get title insurance. If DOT 30 years from now comes back and wants to use this property for any mode of transportation, whether it's even a federally mandated bike path, the DOT can still exercise eminent domain just as they could today. And so we would appreciate your support.
Further discussion, further debate. For what purpose does the lady from New Hanover, Representative Butler Rice?
A brief debate for a second time, Mr. Speaker.
Lady has four.
I think one other thing that is important to stress is that this does not apply to a project where any money has been earmarked for the project. Once money is earmarked for the project, it must be disclosed. So that's important. And then the other side of it, and thank you for the thumbs up, Kelly, the other side of that is that we have sellers who own properties that become stigmatized and devalued, and that's a problem too. And I don't know about the specific project that Representative Harrison speaks of, but I bet that dollars were attributed to that. So that probably was a mandatory disclosure, and I don't know whether it was or not. But in any case, as we balance these competing issues for buyers and sellers, we've got to draw the line somewhere.
For what purpose does the lady from Orange, Representative Price, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, to debate the bill.
The lady has the floor to debate the bill.
Well, actually, I wanted to express my support for the bill because I have served on both an RPO and an MPO, and these comprehensive transportation plans are mostly concept until money is put behind them, and sometimes projects are even scrapped. And so I think it would be burdensome to try to, disclose that a project is going to, is on a map, but it may never even happen. And I've even had that happen in my neighborhood where a road was in the transportation plan for almost 40 years, and then the whole thing was scrapped. So I think that, if you can, as long as it's not falsifying any information, disclose if possible, but I wouldn't put that burden on everyone at this point.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question for the House is the passage of House Bill 29 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote. 108 having voted in the affirmative and 7 in the negative. House Bill 29 passed a second reading without objection. We are at a third time.
Your Assembly of North Carolina next.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 29 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 29 having passed its third reading will be sent to the Senate. Members are going to move down to House Joint Resolution 157. The clerk will read.
Representative Destin Hall, House Joint Resolution 157, a joint resolution inviting His Excellency Governor Roy Cooper to address a joint session of the House of Representatives and Senate. General Senator of North Carolina acts.
Gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall is recognized to debate the resolution.
Members, this is the joint resolution that we're required to pass in order to have the state of the state, which of course is when the governor comes and speaks to us. If you haven't experienced it before, if it's your first term here, it's something I encourage you to come to. It's an event that you will remember. So, of course, we'll invite the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals and other statewide elected officials. It'll be on March the 6th at 7 p.m., which is a Monday night. So we hope to see you there. Please vote yes.
Further discussion, further debate, not the question for the House. Passage of House Joint Resolution 157 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Lambeth wish to vote. Representative Kidwell wish to vote. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 114 having voted in the affirmative, 1 in the negative. House Joint Resolution 157 passes second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
The House resolves, Senate concurs.
Question before the House is passage of House Joint Resolution 157 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Joint Resolution 157 having passed third reading will be sent to the Senate by special messenger. House Bill 34, the clerk will read.
Representatives Hastings, Sane, Carson Smith, and Pirtle, House Bill 34, a bill to be entitled an act to increase the punishment for discharging or attempting to discharge a firearm at or into an occupied emergency vehicle and to increase the punishment for pointing a laser device at a law enforcement officer, law enforcement agency, animal, or other emergency personnel when the person or the animal is in the performance of his or her duties. General Senator of the North Carolina acts.
Gentleman from Gaston, Representative Hastings, recognized to debate the bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. So To be very brief, this would simply send a signal that our emergency services personnel people have a job to do, and they shouldn't be distracted by people attempting to point lasers at them. And the reason it becomes a serious matter is because in some of the riots around the country, our emergency services personnel received injuries from which they might never recover. And this also includes the service animals. As you'll remember, a few years ago, we filed a bill, and we passed it that allowed law enforcement and others to adopt their service animals because they become very close to these animals. The animals help save their lives. And then, of course, one of the other parts of this would be firing weapons into the unoccupied vehicles. That can destroy the equipment that our emergency service personnel that they might need to use, whether it's communication or whatever it might be. And so those are the reasons, the primary reasons that we filed this bill, and would appreciate your support. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? For what purpose, the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Cunningham, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to ask Representative Hastings a question.
Representative Hastings, gentlemen yield.
Of course, sir.
He yields.
Thank you, Representative Hastings. I was wondering if you needed to add vehicles to it, because recently in Lincoln County last week, a lady hit the sheriff deputy with her car twice. So I'm just, you know, it doesn't take a riot for somebody to get out of line, but it did happen. So, you know, the vehicles, other instruments can also injure and kill.
Yes, and
gentleman has four.
And would have been glad to speak to you about an amendment, and maybe we can handle it at a later point in this process if it starts getting to be heard in the Senate. So thank you for your comments.
Further discussion, further debate? Not the question before the House. Passage of House Bill 34 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk, clock machine, record the vote. 112, having voted in the affirmative, 3 in the negative. House Bill 34 passed a second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly, no client in that.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 34 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 34, having passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. House Bill 35, the clerk will read.
Representative Sasser, Potts, Lambert, and Paré. House Bill 35, a bill to be entitled an act to expand the state's definition of opioid antagonists and to include all opioid antagonists approved by the Federal Food and Drug Administration for the treatment of drug overdose and to allow the use of all such federal food and drug approved opioid antagonists to needle and hypodermic syringe exchange programs. General Assembly, no client in that.
Gentleman from Stanley, Representative Sasser, is recognized. Debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 35 is just to expand the definition of opioid antagonist. When the last bill was passed, the only opioid antagonist that was available was Narcan, which generic name Naloxone. Since then, a couple more opioid antagonists have come on the prescription market, so instead of having to change the bill every time another one's cleared to be a prescription medication, we're just changing it to say opioid antagonist. I stand for any questions.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of House Bill 35 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk, lock machine, record the vote. 115, having voted in the affirmative, none, the negative. House Bill 35 passes second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly, no comment on that.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 35 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
The ayes have it. House Bill 35, having passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. House Bill 41, the clerk will read.
Representatives Bradford, Mills, McNeely, and Ray, House Bill 41, a bill to be entitled Hotel Safety Issues, General Assembly, North Carolina Act.
Gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Bradford, recognized, debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, the title of this bill is Hotel Safety Issues because all hotel guests deserve a safe place to stay. This bill clarifies that hotel guests are defined as transient occupants from days 1 through 90, so we're focused on the first 90 days only. Guests in hotels during those 90 days are not tenants, therefore Chapter 42 tenant landlord law does not and should not apply to them. In fact, nowhere in our general statutes does it say that the law of tenancy applies to hotel guests, which is why we're adding this clarity. Just know that in North Carolina, hotels collect an occupancy tax for the first 90 days, which is why we're using the 90-day rule. This has been a long practice standing here in North Carolina. Virginia has a bright line rule of 90 days, as well as South Carolina, for a similar tax issue. The Police Chiefs Association support this bill because there's some lack of clarity that's needed for people who are bad actors and doing unruly things, whether it be breaking hotel rules or even breaking the law, and this bill would help clarify that. And just a friendly reminder, hotels are in the hospitality business, and they want guests as long as those guests follow the rules and follow the law. They have no reason to make anyone else leave. But if you're not going to follow the rules or follow the law in those first 90 days, then hotels should not have to deal with things like summary ejectment, et cetera. So I hope you'll support the bill, and I'm happy to stand for any questions. One last comment. We continue to talk to the North Carolina Justice Center. They've had some concerns over the bill, and we remain open. And in fact, yesterday I responded to some of their concerns with my concerns about their concerns. This bill, of course, will go through the Senate, and we'll continue to work with the Justice Center to try to get it to their liking if possible, because I think that's what we should be doing around here anyway. So just want to make that comment. Thank you very much.
For what purpose the lady from Durham, Representative Austin Rives?
To debate the bill.
Lady has four.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, first I want to thank Representative Bradford for the conversations we've had about this bill and his continued efforts to make some improvements to it. Colleagues, I just wanted to kind of state my opposition to the bill as it's currently written. As of right now, or excuse me, under this bill, folks who are, you know, staying in our hotels and motels will lose landlord-tenant protections that they've had in North Carolina for more than 30 years. And I'm of the opinion that the folks who will be most impacted by this change will be folks who are experiencing chronic, unstable housing, and that this change will make them or put them at greater risk of having even more unstable housing at a time when we're facing a statewide housing crisis. So as it's written, I'm going to vote no on this bill and urge you to do the same. Thank you.
Further discussion, further debate? If not, the question before the House, passage of House Bill 41 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk Lott machine. Actually, Representative Austin, would you lady like to vote? Clerk Lott machine, record the vote. 84 having voted in the affirmative, 30 in the negative. House Bill 41 passed a second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
General Assembly, North Carolina next.
Representative Austin will be counted as a, I would imagine, a no vote.
Yes, sir. I tried to hit the button. Didn't work. Thank you.
Lady will be recorded as having voted no on the bill. Any further discussion, debate on third reading? Seeing none, the question for the House, passage of House Bill 41 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. House Bill 41, having passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. House Bill 50, clerk will read.
Representatives Chester, Destin Hall, Kyle Hall, and Sane, House Bill 50, a bill to be entitled an act to repeal pistol purchase permits. General Assembly of North Carolina next.
Gentleman from Nash, Representative Chesser, recognized, debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't plan on taking long. This is a bill that's familiar to the body. It's been debated here ad nauseum. This is a clean repeal of the pistol purchase permit process. The pistol purchase process is, or the pistol permitting process for purchases has been rendered unnecessary and arbitrary through technological advances and also the work of this body in the past. We've solidified reporting for mental health issues and other issues that now make this a redundancy or a duplicative process. I want to talk about what the bill does for a second. It ensures Second Amendment rights are not infringed by a subjective process. It will prevent undue delays for lawful purchases of firearms. And it will close some loopholes that are currently caused by our current permitting process. What this bill does not do is equally important. It does not have any effect on who can and cannot currently own or possess a firearm. It has no effect on that at all. It does not magically make criminals obey gun laws. That's not going to happen. And it does not further limit the rights of law-abiding gun owners. This bill does have the support of the North Carolina Sheriff's Association. I've been from their representatives, I've been told that they believe it's safe, it's effective, and it'll free up resources within the local sheriff's department so that they can focus on reporting to the NICS system instead of issuing of the permits. And it'll prevent delays that are currently built into the permitting process. And so with that, I ask that the body support it.
For what purpose, the lady from Guilford, Representative Harrison, rise.
To debate the bill.
Lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Ladies and gentlemen of the House, I stand before you as a very proud gun owner who supports the Second Amendment. But I do want to point out how wrong this bill is on so many levels, especially the timing, how we've had this explosion of gun deaths in our country and mass shootings. Just a few statistics. In 2022, there were 647 mass shootings in the country, and there were 45,000 gun deaths. And there were more than 1,500 here in North Carolina. In 2023, and I wrote this last week, so I know the numbers changed, that we've had 72 mass shootings already this year in our country. So a few more in, specific to North Carolina. North Carolina has a 14th highest rate of gun violence in the country. They are the leading cause of death of children and teens in North Carolina. Guns are the leading cause of death of children and teens. That's an alarming fact. And this is something I did not know. Gun violence in North Carolina costs $19.5 billion to our economy, and $471 million of that comes from taxpayers. And I can send you the citation for that report, but that was pretty startling about how much gun violence is costing us. And I sort of disagree with the bill sponsor that this will not increase gun violence because it's going to increase folks who have access to guns that shouldn't have them. Often it's said that this is duplicative of the federal system, that the federal will cover it, but that's simply not the truth. Because the federal does not require background checks on sales between unlicensed parties. So the FBI will not be conducting background checks for gun shows or private purchases that aren't covered by the federal statutes. And, the thing is about the North Carolina pistol permitting, which, by the way, my sheriff really likes. He does not want us to repeal it, Guilford County Sheriff, is that it requires a more thorough search than is required by federal law, and often the sheriffs sort of know locally who should appropriately have a gun or not based on arrests or warrants or past criminal activity. That's a real important public safety feature here in North Carolina. And I will say another statistic I found that in states that do not have the pistol permitting process, 57% of firearms didn't include any kind of a background check. And we know background checks are overwhelmingly favored by the country and definitely by North Carolinians. It's something like 90%. So we know that background checks are effective to keep guns out of the hands of people who should not have guns. And also a statistic that is somewhat alarming is when Missouri went through this and repealed their pistol permitting, their gun deaths went up by 30%. And that is another very alarming statistic. Overall, in a 2019 analysis indicated that homicide rates are 10% lower in states that have pistol permitting than in those who don't. So I submit to you that the evidence is compelling and overwhelming that repealing pistol permits will result in dead North Carolinians, and I encourage you to vote no. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Catawba, Representative Adams, rise?
To debate the bill.
The gentleman has for debate the bill.
I've been involved with pistol purchase permits for almost 60 years. I grew up in Cabarrus County, where J.B. Roberts would issue one permit, pistol purchase permit, to anyone. but only one. That was his way of accounting for things. So anybody could get one, but nobody could get two. That's how it was abused back then. But the pistol purchase permit, I have observed in the last few years the fact that people couldn't get their pistol purchase permits. Now, put that in perspective. Last year, the National Instant Criminal Background Check System had over 16 million hits for people wishing to buy firearms. People are afraid right now of crime, and they want to arm themselves, and they have a Second Amendment right to do that. So I wrote the bill originally. It said that if you can't get your pistol purchase permit in the county in which you reside, you could go to any adjacent county and get that pistol purchase permit. The sheriffs got in touch with me, and they sent me a letter on April 30th last year, I'm sorry, 2021, and they said that they would support a full repeal. And their reasoning was simply this. A few years ago, we got $250,000 to digitize all of the mental health records and put them in the National Institute Criminal Background Check System. That was the one thing that they were concerned that was not there to check out a person who wished to buy a firearm. We put that in, and they said now the system is completely redundant. The pistol purchase permit system is. So the Sheriff's Association asked for the full repeal. That was not a proposal from me. I had a different proposal altogether. Now, let's consider this. The sheriffs know best how to use the resources that they have. My sheriff said, for my people to sit around and write pistol purchase permits to law-abiding citizens and take up the filing system, the office space, and the personnel to do that is not the best use of our resources. Now, I believe that. Sheriffs should be able to determine how they should use their resources, and pistol purchase permits is not an effective way of fighting crime. Now, some of the other things that were said, let us remember this. We are legislating for North Carolina. Our legislation does not affect East St. Louis or San Francisco or Los Angeles, where some of the big numbers are. You know, only 2% of the counties in the country produce 50% of the violent deaths by firearms. And that's not us. We had last year, I'm using the North Carolina Violent Death Reporting System. The most recent copy is from 2019. And if you look at this, first thing, when you consider the fact that there are like 1,200 deaths from firearms, and almost 66% of them are suicides. 66% are suicides. Now, if you want to have a conversation about assisted suicide, we could do that, and we could probably reduce that number of firearm deaths considerably. However, I would suggest that you would probably increase the number of suicides. Making it easier to commit suicide would probably increase that number. I don't know if we want to do that. But when you get to homicides, there's like 778 homicides in North Carolina. That's a big number for us, but pistol purchase permits are not going to drive that number down. So I think that this is a good bill. It's what the Sheriff's Association wants. It's honest. It's not deceptive. It's just simply saying let the sheriffs determine how they're going to use their resources in fighting crime. The pistol purchase permits have been abused. They've been abused for a century. I know that firsthand because I've been observing for more than a half century. I suggest you vote for the bill. Thank you.
For what purpose does the lady from Forsyth, Representative Baker, rise?
I ask the bill sponsor a question.
Representative Chester, gentleman yield. He yields.
Sir, can you just explain to me in very layman terms, I'm trying to understand, what this bill will do? Is it saying that if you purchase a gun, you no longer are required to get a permit to get the purchase? It was a lot of words used, and I'm just trying to understand what the bill will do.
Yes, ma'am. Currently, you can use a permit to bypass the federal background checks. We're saying that no longer is the sheriff's responsibility to issue permits. So we're doing away. It's just strictly striking language for the issuance of permits.
Ask another question, sir.
Gentleman yield to an additional question?
He yields.
Okay, so you're saying this bill, you will still have to get a background check, but you won't have to have a permit. And we're saying that the background check process is automated, so it will be most, probably have the most up-to-date information?
In agreement with what Representative Adams said, this body took steps 2 years ago to ensure that the federal background system was more robust and more real time. And so that system will now suffice as the sole background check required.
Thank you, sir. May I debate the bill, sir?
Ladies recognize, debate the bill.
I'm trying to understand exactly what the bill is doing. I don't know what's happening in your counties, but in Winston-Salem, we have clocked our 12th death this year. Two of them have been children. I live in the hot zone in Winston-Salem, and for those of you who don't understand that, that is one of the highest crime districts in the city. And so I'm just a little leery of us creating policy that is less effective for gun ownership. And let me be real clear, I am pro-gun ownership. Matter of fact, with all the violence that's happening in America right now, I'm in the process of going through my classes so I can become a gun owner. But I think that it does not play well given the number of deaths that we have, not in East St. Louis, or not on the West Coast, but right here in some of our own larger urban centers in North Carolina. And I do believe that if you are a law-abiding citizen, you have no problem with accountability for your firearms. Again, two of those deaths were children, and they lost their lives at the hands of guns. Now, I understand that the Sheriff's Association is in support, but I was just at a community meeting last night where our local law enforcement is not in for. They are not in support of the bill because of fear of increased gun violence in our city, and I would add increased opportunities for our law enforcement agents to be injured by a gun. So I would ask that as you consider your position, that you consider that 12 people in the city of Winston-Salem, two of which are children, have lost their lives. Thank you.
For purpose, lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Cunningham, rise.
To debate the bill.
The lady has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm just going to tell a little story right quick. On January the 2nd of this past year, a man up in High Point, I don't see his representative in here today, a man that lived in High Point, approximately 42 years old. His wife was in the house, his three children were in the house, and two other people were in the house. He had a mental health background. He had been treated several times. An involuntary commitment order was issued. That was on January the 2nd. On January the 7th, he took a gun. He killed his three children. The other two people ran out of the house. He killed his wife, and he turned the gun on himself, and he killed himself. I called. I tried to get some information because I couldn't understand it because we have statutory law that says if you are involuntarily committed and picked up and taken to the hospital and supposedly be treated, that you're required to stay there for 10 days. For another hearing to see if you're capable to return to society without being a harm to yourself, a harm to the public, or a harm to your loved ones. I don't know what happened. I'm still wondering what happened there. But one thing I do know, I don't know where he got his gun from, but we know all his family died from gunshots, and he did too. I don't know who gonna feed the National Criminal Instant Background Check if the sheriff's not feeding it. If somebody can tell me that, I might could say, well, maybe. Because now the sheriff's feeding.
and it hasn't been accurate for years. And we refused to take federal funding when we had an opportunity to build that system out to make it work better. So if somebody can tell me who's going to feed the NICS database if our sheriff's not going to do it. And somebody can find me an answer why this man done killed his whole family when he should have been involuntarily committed. I need some answers. I can't support this bill.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, rise?
Debate the bill.
The gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to point out to the body that the North Carolina Sheriff's Association does support this legislation. Now, I'm sure there's individual sheriffs throughout the state that do not. You're always going to have differences of opinion. But the leaders of that organization have determined that the pistol purchase permit is no longer a necessary item. As far as background checks, you're still required to have a background check in the state of North Carolina. If I transfer a firearm to Representative Humphrey here in a private transaction, we're still supposed to have a transaction of a background check. So this does not change that effect. It's still required by law. I'm also pretty sure that criminals don't get background checks or pistol purchase permits or anything along those lines. In fact, most criminals acquire their guns by breaking into cars and homes and stealing them. Okay, so unless you're going to have them before they can steal the gun out of your car, fill out a pistol purchase permit, this bill doesn't do any good. Or this law doesn't do any good. So check me if I'm wrong, but last time I knew, criminals don't get background checks before they buy a gun. I'd also point out that I find it very strange that there's a lot of folks out here that feel we have to have an ID check and things of this nature in order to exercise one of our rights. It's the only right, in fact, that we have to do that. Don't have to get a background check to go get a newspaper. I don't have to get a background check to go vote. I don't have to get a background check to keep troops from being housed in my home. But I have to get one for this. One of the most sacred rights we have, in fact, a lot of people have died for, is the right to vote. And I know there's a lot of people on this floor that are against having ID to do that. But here I'm one of the most important, and what our founding fathers believed was one of the tenets of this nation, the right to the Second Amendment. We're not talking about hunting people. We're talking about the right to defend yourself. We're talking about the right to protect your family, your loved ones. And by requiring additional steps, in addition to the NICS background check, which still will be required, you're infringing on that right. I urge you to vote yes on this bill.
For what purpose, Lay from Durham, Representative Morey rise.
To debate the bill.
Lady has the floor.
I speak in opposition of the repeal because I think North Carolina currently has a comprehensive approach when someone wants to buy a pistol. There is the NICS system, but it does not cover much of what our local sheriffs can cover when they do the check. Mental health records, domestic violence, civil protective orders. Our state laws are different than federal laws on domestic violence. Last year, our sheriff in Durham County denied 133 permits to people who had these issues come up when he was investigating for the permit purchase. 133 people who didn't get it because there was good cause, good reason for him to deny it. That's just in Durham. All I'm saying is this is an extra layer of protection. And we are not talking about denying people their rights to eventually get a gun. We're saying you do need to go through a permit process. Newspapers don't kill, but guns do. And if you've seen the devastation of the earthquake in Turkey and Syria and 47,000 people have died, that's the exact number of how many people die of gun violence every year on average in this country. We have to do something. And we currently have something in place that I will say does save lives. Let's not repeal it and take off that layer of protection. Thank you.
What purpose, gentlemen from Wake, Representative Longest, rise?
To debate the,
to debate the bill.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen, my point is a narrow one. One of the primary arguments advanced in support of this bill is that our state's pistol purchase permit is redundant or obsolete because it is duplicative of federal law. I respectfully disagree. Under federal law, a licensed interstate dealer, manufacturer, or importer of firearms has the affirmative duty to conduct a background check through the National Instant Criminal Background Check System before selling a handgun to a prospective buyer. That protection does not extend to sellers who are not licensed dealers. For private sales, that is, sales made by an unlicensed seller, federal law only prohibits the seller from selling a firearm to someone if the seller knows or has reasonable cause to believe that the prospective buyer is prohibited under federal law from possessing or purchasing a firearm. That means that a buyer who shouldn't have a gun under federal law, such as a felon or a domestic abuser, can circumvent a federal background check by buying a gun from a private seller. At no point is an unlicensed seller in a private sale required to run a background check through NICS before making that sale. So although federal law does not require a background check for any private sale of a firearm by an unlicensed seller, North Carolina's pistol purchase permit does. Now, I believe background checks are a common sense requirement for every handgun sale, and that's because requiring background checks saves lives. But whatever you think about the merits of background checks, don't vote for this bill because you think it is duplicative of federal background check requirements. It is not. If you're going to vote for this bill, do so knowing that fewer background checks will be conducted in North Carolina, and North Carolina families could pay the price. Thank you.
Representative Austin, the chair is in possession of the member's amendment. However, upon review of the amendment, it does go beyond the scope of the bill, is not germane, and therefore the chair would rule the amendment out of order would be returned to the lady. However, the chair will grant the lady, if she would like to debate the bill, a little bit of extra leave to speak on the matter.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Lady has forward to debate the bill.
Thank you. Colleagues, this amendment would create a new A1 misdemeanor of domestic violence. This misdemeanor would essentially trigger a federal ban on the purchase of firearms by people convicted of an assault involving domestic violence. Right now, in order for that federal law to apply, we have to rely on common law interpretations on a case-by-case basis by our federal courts. This is just a loophole in our domestic violence protections that we can close easily with this amendment. This is a very narrowly tailored layer of protection that would be valuable under really any circumstance, but especially, especially important in an environment where we're kind of removing the pistol permitting process. So I urge your support. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jones, rise?
Rise to debate the bill and make a few remarks on it.
Gentleman has forward to debate the bill.
You know, gun ownership in America is a sacred right. It really is. The Second Amendment says a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Just 2.5 sentences. That amendment, it's like a religion. I own a gun, a rifle. I'm pretty good with it, actually. I had a friend of mine that we used to like target shoot when I went to school up north. And I like my gun. I'm glad I own it. And people certainly have a right to own pistols. But I think the advantage of keeping track of who has it, I don't care who knows I own a gun. In fact, I think that's good, because I don't want people coming to my house thinking I don't have anything to help myself with. But pistols, all we're asking is that we know who owns the guns. That's all. Nothing wrong with that. And it doesn't burden the sheriffs. They're used to doing it. And I think the sheriffs, actually, I found this out studying the North Carolina Constitution. The sheriff is the highest law enforcement officer in any county, higher than the head of the highway patrol, higher than all the police chiefs in any particular county. The sheriff, the high sheriff, that's what they call him that. And he knows, he or she tends to know their people and who's where and what. And I think that's a good thing. So I don't think you have to be a anti-gun person to say we don't want to take away this rule that just helps us know who has the guns. That's all. I don't think it's going to take anyone's gun away. And I was curious, I was going to ask the person responsible for this question, was someone having trouble getting a gun? I think if you want a gun, you're not a felon, you probably can get a gun. Anybody. You can get a gun, protect your family. Carry it around. I used to carry a gun with me when I went around the state sometimes, depending on where I was going, through whole court. I felt better. But I don't think it hurts to have a permit, to require that people have a permit, because we talk about mental health issues. Well, you know, the problem with the mental health issue, we don't know who the people are until they act out. And then a bunch of people may be hurt. But I don't think this bill is going to cause anybody not to be able to get a pistol who wants a pistol. But if you take away the bill, take away the rule, I meant to say, it's going to cause anyone not to get a pistol who wants a pistol. But if you take away the rule, I think, you know, it may increase the number of guns out there, which I don't think is necessary in the hands of people who might, should have gone through the sheriff's department, you know. And one last thing I'll say about that, you know, the sheriffs that I've dealt with in Wake County and other places I've lived, they tend to know their people pretty well. Democrat or Republican, black or white, man or woman. They tend to know where the country stores are. They know what's going on. And they drive around and so forth. And they know who people are. And this is just a commonsensical rule we've had for 100 and some years. I don't think it stopped anybody from getting a pistol who needs to have a pistol. I really don't. I don't think there's been a big problem. Maybe there hasn't, and things I don't know about. So I think we ought to just keep the common sense rule the way it is. It's been a pretty good rule for 100 years. Nobody's been stopped from having a pistol that wants one to speak of. And so I commend it to you. Thank you for listening. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Chatham, Representative Reeves, rise.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To be recognized for a couple of questions for the rules chair.
Representative Hall, does the gentleman yield to a series of questions from the House Minority Leader?
I thought I was going to get a day off, but I yield.
He yields.
Members are
recognized for a series of questions.
Thank you. Procedurally, I'm just trying to figure out. Representative Alston had an amendment that I believe you were given a copy of. Is that correct?
Yes, I was given a copy.
To my knowledge, that amendment was taken from the bill that was actually passed out of Judiciary 2 rules. Is that correct in your understanding?
I don't know the answer to that. You'd have to ask the member carrying the bill, but that may very well be. I'll assume it is for purposes of this line of question.
All right. And so if we assume that that is correct, that was taken out before the and we were given a PCS in rules. Is that correct?
I think there was a PCS in rules in this committee for this bill.
All right. No further questions, Mr. Speaker. Thank you.
For what purpose, gentleman from Lincoln, Representative Sain, rise.
Speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, members. Just real quick, as we wrap up this debate, you know, a lot of acronyms have been thrown around, NICS, and you may or may not know what that really stands for, what it means, or what's behind NICS. So I looked it up really quickly at the FBI website, which is simply the process is this. When a person tries to buy a firearm, the seller, known as a federal firearms licensee, contacts NICS electronically or by phone. The prospective buyer fills out the ATF form, and the FFL, the firearms licensee, relays that information to the NICS. The NICS staff performs a background check on the buyer. That background check verifies the buyer does not have a criminal record or isn't otherwise ineligible to purchase or own a firearm. Since launching in 1998, more than 300 million checks have been done, leading to more than 1.5 million denials. The system does work. This is simply streamlining the process, taking something that is cumbersome to some of our citizens in North Carolina and treating them all very fairly, and making sure that everyone in North Carolina who legally wants to own a firearm can do so, and do so in an effective and efficient manner. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the lady from Lake, Representative Dahl, rise?
To debate the bill.
The lady has four.
I was hoping I wasn't going to say anything on this, but I want to be straight on what the law is, because I did consult with staff after the debate and rules. I wanted to make sure I knew what the law was, and I wanted to make sure I was clear on it. If we repeal the pistol permit, a private seller does not have to have a bill of sales if they buy or sell that gun. There is no traceable means. And there is no, you do not have to transfer the registration. The only time you have to transfer the registration, have a bill of sale, or it's traceable, is when you go to a gun shop. That's it. And they do an FFLA, which is a federal firearm licensing, and then you'll get a background check. That background check is not as intensive as a NICS check. And I just want people to understand that this is not about keeping guns out of people who believe in the second right. This is not about keeping guns out of your hands. This is about having you go through a process. You have a tool just like a car. You have to get a license for a car. You have to get insurance. A car can fatally wound people, as my friend over here said, just like a gun can. So what's the big deal? I went down there. Yeah, it took 3 weeks for me to get my pistol permit. I don't know why I would need one faster than that. I made plans, you know, to go. I never used the pistol permit. I shoot a shotgun, but still. My wife went and bought a gun. But anyways, that's not even a part of the story. The part of the story is it takes 3 weeks. You can get five of them. That means you can buy one a month. And then you have to take Christmas off, but you should be buying somebody else a present then. So what's the big deal? I just don't get it. Actually, no, that would be one every other month. Sorry. I just don't understand what we're trying to correct here. If you want a gun, you can get a gun. There is no legal reason for us to keep on tracking this if we repeal this pistol permit. It's not duplicative, as my other friend over here said. I know I'm not going to change anybody's mind, but I just want to make it clear. Private sales without a pistol permit, you can just go by. There's no background checks, and there's no knowledge, there could be no knowledge of that person and if that person has a mental health issue. And if you're okay with selling somebody a deadly weapon who may or may not have a mental health issue that could then go use that gun for ill will, then I guess knock yourself out.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Union, Representative Arbrice,
speak on the bill?
The gentleman has floor, debate the bill.
What I want to do is thank the representatives for the very thoughtful engagement here. Representative Baker, Representative Jones, Representative Dahl, thank you for your comments. What I would offer is a different perspective. And what I would say is that the Second Amendment rights are constitutional rights, and but for violations, you can own a gun and everything. The background check that the pistol permit was trying to do is to make sure that you are not ineligible to do that. And we have, as it been stated, that we have increased the accuracy of the NICS background check and so forth like that. But what I would say is, you say, what's the big deal? I can't tell you how many times people in that I know have attempted to get a pistol permit that are eligible to do that. No criminal background. There's no mental health issues. And the permit has been weaponized, so to speak, because they don't want to issue more guns. Representative Baker, you talked about the tragedy of gun violence and the people. I think we have to ask ourselves how many of them that committed those atrocious crimes would have been stopped by this pistol permit. And my suspicion is that they were illegally owning the guns and that the pistol permit would not have stopped that from happening. Evil people do evil things. And what I ask is that this pistol permit has been used to stop people's constitutional right from purchasing these guns. And it varies across the state. And that is exactly why it is such a point of consternation. And so, I believe that we have sufficiently improved the NICS background system, uploading the mental health data, and have moved further so that we can rely on the NICS background check and not abridge the rights of law-abiding citizens to purchase that in any shorter way. Do we say the right to vote is good next election? No, it's immediate. It's a constitutional right. Do we say justice in the court later on is okay? No, it's a constitutional right. And when it's being applied unequally across the state, that's where we see the problem. And I just, kindly thank you for the debate and just wanted to offer a different perspective on that. Thank you.
For what purpose, gentleman from Durham, Representative Hawkins, rise.
To ask the bill sponsor, where he can yield to Representative Kidwell, a question about the bill.
Representative Chester, gentleman yield.
He yields.
My colleagues have spoken to this fairly well, and I have spoken to Representative Kidwell. My question came up about the ability to exclude a county or an entity from this repeal. And so Representative Kidwell and I hope he engages in a good discussion, but then before I asked him the question, I had made a request to get some information, and just wanted to make sure that we're thinking about this, because as I shared with him, my sheriff is not in favor of the bill and has worked to clear up our backlogs and thinks that the system that does the background checks is not up to date as he needs to. So the question is, by making this repeal, are we pushing for what is called implied preemption? And what I mean by that is, like, state law can preempt what's happened on the local. Because what I got was, is that if with something like a repeal versus a prohibition, then it doesn't allow for what they call implied and preemption. And so, which means if a county, and that's what it reads to me, is if a county wants to, or a city wants to exclude themselves from something like this, unless there is implied preemption over what they do locally, then we should be able to do that. Is that correct? Or are we saying that whatever is made here, because it's not, we're not prohibiting anything, we're repealing, right? The ability to have a pistol permit. Am I correct?
So what we're doing is the state mandated that sheriffs provide pistol permits. We were repealing that language and removing a mandate.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. So that's the trigger language for me, is that since you're repealing something that was, something that was in state law, you're repealing that. You're not prohibiting the sheriffs from doing it if they want to. You're just repealing it from state. So if a local entity said, I don't want to participate, I would love to still issue pistol permits, Will they be able to do that? Because this is not an implied, no one has said there's an implied preemption over what locals can do in this entity. And again, when I talked to him, I didn't know the answer, but I'm just asking the additional question because I was satisfied with what Kidwell and I talked about. And then the conversation sort of came up, and I just wanted to make sure that I could get some clarity on that. And this is just because I think, as I shared with him, that, some counties just have, I think, higher rates of incidents and may not necessarily feel like their county is in the best place to continue or go along with this. And they may at some point, but right now they may not feel that they're able to. So I just wanted to ask, I don't know if you would yield to add to it, but I saw that and I just, again, based on his conversation, I trust my colleague's judgment, but when the conflict of information came, I just wanted to make sure that I could get some clarity on that ability, so.
The gentleman has the floor to respond to the question if he would like.
Yeah, thanks to staff for the bailout here. So actually, General Statute 14409-40 is a uniform preemption statute for this, for firearms. So the state already has preemption. I can forward that to you at the end.
I just can't hear you, sir.
There is a statewide preemption statute already on firearms.
Okay.
Representative Hawkins, desire to be recognized any further?
I just want somebody else to explain that to me because I didn't understand what the member said. I understand the words he said, but I need some further explanation. If he can't explain it, then maybe we can get a Second Amendment expert to answer the question.
It looks like Representative Kidwell is itching to do that right now. So if the gentleman would like to direct that question to Representative Kidwell, I assume the gentleman yields. He yields. The gentleman may pose his question.
Representative Hawkins. Your question is the same as what we had here?
Yeah.
So you do actually have a state law in North Carolina that the laws are equal throughout the state. That was done, I believe it was 2011, that area, to allow that you could not go from one county to another, one city to another, and have different laws in effect. The other thing I would point out is let's assume for a moment that we did exclude a particular county or a particular sheriff felt he still had the authority to do that. Number one, I think there's at least one person in this body that would run a bill against that very quickly.
Okay. Would that be?
The second thing I think you would find would happen is if the people in Durham County can't buy a gun in Durham County, they're going to come to Beaufort County. Will they be welcomed with open arms by our county sheriff or Craven or Dare or Hyde in order to get a permit? You know, you're still looking at, they still have to get the next background check. You know, so for a sheriff to say they're going to preempt the state law, and do remember this is a Dillon law state, so that the counties and cities are actually subdivisions of the state, so they don't have the freedom to make those type of choices. Does that answer the question?
May I respond, Mr. Speaker?
Gentlemen can either ask a question, another question, or debate the bill.
Okay. Well, I'll ask another question.
Gentlemen, yield.
I yield.
He yields.
So it's the same question that I asked here is that I was just asking about whether or not this was implied preemption. And so you answered that question because the language, that I read, says unless there is implied preemption or stated preemption, then it does give locals the opportunity, to think about this. So thank you for clarifying that because I wanted to confirm what we talked about. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Representative Dobbs, I'm still trying to get that image of you carrying a shotgun around out of my head right now. For what purpose does the lady rise?
Just to debate the bill for a second time.
The lady has four to debate the bill a second time.
And I think, Jay, I think Representative Adams might have a picture of me with a shotgun. I just want to remind folks that in order to vote in the state of North Carolina, in order to vote in, I think, the United States, you have to register. That's all we're asking. Pistol permit, registers, you're an owner, you go, you get a background check. We're not asking for anything big. We're just asking for registration, which is what the pistol permit offers. Thanks.
For what purpose, Gentleman from Catawba? Representative Adams, rise.
Debate the bill a second time.
Gentleman has the floor. Debate the bill a second time.
A couple of things going on here. First, I'm just going to cover the evolution of the pistol purchase permit as I have experienced it. When I first got a pistol purchase permit in the late 1960s, all you had to do is get the permit. You didn't have to go buy it. All you had to do is possess it. And you could go to a gun shop and you could buy a gun with that pistol purchase permit. Didn't check your age, didn't look at your driver's license or anything. That was in the late 1960s. That's the way it was. There was no tracking of the permit. After you used the pistol purchase permit, the gun shop didn't keep the permit. It might staple it. I don't even know if we had a 1099 form back then. But the point was there was no tracking mechanism for the pistol purchase permit. Now, when we get to personal individual exchange of firearms, that pistol purchase permit was supposed to still be used. But there was no tracking system for it. What would you do with it? Somebody would buy a gun from you, give you a pistol purchase permit, and you'd throw it in a garbage can. That's the way it worked back then. It never was intended to be a means of registration or qualification of a buyer. It was merely a way for the sheriff to say yes or no to a person who wished to buy a gun. And back then, you could buy a dozen pistol purchase permits at one time. They were a dollar a piece. If you weren't in Cabarrus County. In Cabarrus County, you got one. But as it's evolved, what we have identified a few years ago was that sheriffs were creating their own pistol purchase permits and running them off on their laser printer. And so there was a lot of inconsistency across the state. Somebody from Hyde County could go to Ashe County holding a Hyde County pistol purchase permit, and they wouldn't know whether it was legitimate or not. Now, some counties would emboss the pistol purchase permit, giving a little bit more credibility to them, and we cleaned that up. We straightened that up. We made them more consistent. But still, the pistol purchase permit had extremely limited purpose. And if, you know, the thing is, if you had somebody who came in from out of state, moved into a county, went to the sheriff to get a pistol purchase permit, the sheriff could check, see what was going on around here. He could use the NICS system, see what was going outside of the state. But the NICS system has been around for, 27 years now. They poured a lot of money into it. It is working. It is definitely working. The sheriffs believe that, and I do too. Today, you can still go get a pistol purchase permit. You can buy five of them at one time. And if we want to have a conversation about mental health, you can have that pistol purchase permit for a number of years, and you're not going to be able to predict what that person's mental health status is years down the road. I am going to just say to you that the sheriffs asked for this, and we should follow their request. Vote for the repeal.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 50 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Clerk will lock the machine, record the vote. 68 having voted in the affirmative, 47 in the negative. House Bill 50 passes second reading without objection. Be read third time.
The Honorable McClain and that.
Question for the House is the passage of House Bill 50 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes have it. House Bill 50 having passed third reading will be sent to the Senate. Remember, we have a number of recognitions the chair would like to, and actually, Representative McGee, gentlemen would like to be recorded as no.
Yes, sir.
Representative G, I saw that green and a sea of red. I started to call you out, but wasn't sure. Gentlemen, be recorded as having voted no. Chair is honored to recognize several guests who are here with us. They're elected officials. On motion of the members from Gaston County, Representatives Loftus, Torbett, and Hastings, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Gastonia City Council members Danielle Barber and Jennifer Stepp, as well as Assistant City Manager Adrian Miller. Also from Gaston County, the Mayor of Lowell, Sandy Rayleigh, Mayor Pro Tem Travis Smith, Council Members Joanna Fulbright and Thomas Gillespie, City Manager Scott Attaway. Also from Gaston County, from the town of Cramerton, we have Mayor Nelson Wills who is here, Town Commissioner Ramsey Helms, County Commissioners Ramsey, Helms, and Atkinson, Town Manager Zach Ollis, and also on behalf of myself and Representative Hastings, we're honored to have with us some folks from the city of Shelby, Mayor Stan Anthony, Council Members Violet Arp, Charles Weber, David Cosby, City Manager Rick Howe, Assistant City Manager Justin Merritt, and then my own hometown mayor, Scott Neisler, who's with us as well. Would y'all please stand so we can properly welcome you and join you with us today. And members, I've seen other officials have come in, so if members see their local folks here, send forward up. We do have two bills, and chair will make sure that we recognize and welcome our guest with us. And appears, on behalf of the County of Brunswick, on behalf of Representatives Eiler and Miller, to here to welcome Mayor Haddam from the town of Southport. Mayor Haddam, where are you, sir? Our man. Good to see you, sir. Thanks for being with us. House Bill 72, the clerk will read.
Representatives Carson Smith, Clemens, White, and Kristen Baker. House Bill 72, a bill to be entitled an act to launch a statewide firearm safe storage warrant initiative to educate the public about the importance of the safe storage of firearms and to facilitate the distribution of gun locks. General Assembly, North Carolina, next.
Gentleman from Pender, Representative Carson Smith, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Now that we've purchased the firearms, we want to be sure folks in the state know how to store them safely. This is a bill that was run 2 years ago. It passed the House 116-1, and it basically directs the State Department of Public Safety to develop a website and a toolkit, that toolkit to be used by local agencies or local entities, to help folks realize how to safely store their firearms. It also has the state create how to get that out, an outreach plan, so that the counties, the cities, the folks, the organizations that have any interest in coming up with initiatives on their own know how to and kind of have a roadmap of how to do it. Again, it passed here a couple years ago. Didn't make it through the Senate. We're going to send it back over to ask everybody for their support.
The lady from Durham, Representative Morey, is recognized to send forth Amendment ACL 6. Clerk will read.
Representative Moore moves to amend the bill.
Lady has the floor to debate the amendment.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And members, you'll love this. It's a simple amendment. What it does, if you have the bill pulled up, Section 5, is a prohibition on advocacy. On line 34, section 5, the words prohibition on advocacy. My amendment is saying to take out the first sentence of section 5, which would delete the prohibition on advocacy, the Firearm Safe Storage Awareness Initiative required under section 1 of this act, and any state funds used to launch, maintain the initiative shall not be used to advocate, promote, or lobby for the creation of new or revision of existing laws regulating firearms. So this amendment simply removes that line. I think it is questionable. It violates the First Amendment on freedom of speech. I have never seen a bill in our body say prohibition on advocacy. The second line addresses limiting any of these funds for this initiative, for this purpose, for this bill. I think it keeps very clear that anything in this initiative is only to be used to promote firearm safe storage and the use of gun locks. So I appreciate the bill. I hope you support this amendment. I think it will keep it out of any potential lawsuits on the First Amendment and prohibition on advocacy.
For what purpose does the lady, is this on the amendment? This is on the bill, right? Okay. Gentleman from Pender, Representative Smith, recognized to debate the amendment.
Now, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would ask that the body not support the amendment, taking out the part that says neither this initiative or any money that is put toward this initiative can't be used to advocate, promote, or lobby for any new gun laws or to change any laws. I think that's very reasonable to try to take the politics out of it. We just want this bill to be about safe storage. We don't want anything that would come from what this initiative would set up to be used for anything other than that. So I would ask the body vote no on the amendment.
For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Ball, rise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question regarding the amendment.
Representative Smith, the gentleman yield?
I do.
He yields.
Thank you so much. When this was passed before so dramatically, was Section 5 in that bill as it's currently written in this bill?
It was. I checked it briefly, and I think word for word, it is the very same that it was 2 years ago.
Okay, thank you.
Any more on the amendment? For what purpose, the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise.
On the amendment, speak a second time.
Please recognize debate the amendment a second time.
Thank you. And thank you, Representative Smith. My worry is, what are we doing? We have a website, we have a toolkit, we reach out to the public, and what if the conversation that you're reaching out to goes in a direction of, oh my gosh, this is what we should do for safe storage. Maybe we should do more. I mean, this would prohibit any type of language. Would you have to shut down the website, the toolkit, the initiative? So that's what I'm worried, this prohibition on advocacy, it will stop any dialogue with people you're trying to reach to talk about what you're advocating for, but it would prohibit talking about any existing law changes or more safe gun legislation.
Question for the House, passage of Amendment A1, sent forward by Representative Morey. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Representative Pirtle, the gentleman wish to vote on the amendment. Clerk will lock machine, record the vote. 46, 7 voted in the affirmative, 69, the negative, the amendment fails. Lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Cunningham, recognize debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I really had a question for Representative Carson. Up, you not on your job.
I'm sorry, could the lady please state the request again?
Yes, I have a question for Representative
for
Carson.
For a question, Smith. Representative Smith, does the gentleman yield?
I do.
He yields.
Thank you. Representative Carson, is there a physical note for the initiative?
I'm sorry, is there what?
A physical note. Do you have a physical note for the cost for the program?
No, we don't. 2 years ago, there was a cost built into it. Department of Public Safety has done a little bit of looking into what it would take to do this. It's possible that it's going to be at no cost or very little cost. So if it's something that we do and they need a little bit, we'll try to put in the budget for them.
A follow-up, Mr. Speaker.
Gentleman, yield?
I yield.
He yields.
Thank you. Now, I currently serve on the Child Fatality Task Force at the pleasure of the Speaker. And according recently, the money that was put in there for the initiative pilot program is going to run out June the 30th. So there is some money attached to it. And I would ask you to go back and find the money if you're going to have an appropriation for it, because there is money needed, because they've used an amount and it's going to expire. I sent the Child Fatality Task Force out of what they were looking at for the budget, and it's in there, so everybody needs to look for it. But there is a request for the initiative to continue, and it does require some appropriations. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I'm not sure if there was a question or not. If there is, gentleman's recognized to answer the question.
I'll answer the question. Certainly this bill didn't pass last time, so there may have been something somewhere else that's earmarked for it that I don't know about. But if there's money there, please point me to it, and we'll make it work. Thank you.
For what purpose, Speaker, I'll help him. Thank you.
You're welcome. For what purpose the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise?
To debate the bill.
Lady has floor.
Members, I think the intent of this bill is admirable. We want to make everyone aware of safe storage of guns. We want to make everyone aware to wear your seatbelt. But we are in the middle of a gun crisis. We have more mass shootings this year and deaths than we have days of the year so far. I mean, the days of gun safety awareness should have been long ago. We should be doing action, not just awareness. We have filed on this side of the aisle many bills over the last 3 or 4 years. Nothing is a panacea, nothing will cure gun violence, but it could help it. It could help reduce the number of tragedies we see. I filed a bill this year. We haven't had a committee hearing on it. It says, if you have a gun in an unattended vehicle, lock it up. It's that simple. Lock it up. Do it. Don't be aware about it. Do it. Representative Kidwell, in his remarks, just said, most criminals get their guns out of cars. Why can't we pass a bill that's doing something much more than just making us aware of what we already know is happening in this state? 1,600 North Carolinians will die this year from gun violence. We could be doing more. And I hope we take that challenge. But I do applaud Representative Smith. Thank you for this initiative. But we have so much more we need to be doing. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, further debate. If not, question for the House, passage of House Bill 72 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Representative Prather wish to vote. Clerk of Lot Machine record a vote 111, having voted in the affirmative 4 in the negative. House Bill 72 passes second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
Dilson with North Carolina next.
Question for the House. Passage of House Bill 72 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed no. The ayes have it. House Bill 72, having passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. House Bill 75, clerk will read.
Representatives Lambeth, Christian Baker, White, and Sasser, House Bill 75, a bill to be entitled an act to adjust the supervision arrangement of physician assistants and to make various changes to the licensure of physician assistants. General Sherman, North Carolina acts.
The gentleman from Forsyth, Representative Lambeth, is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The PA profession was founded as an innovative way to expand access to health care right here in North Carolina in 1967. Just a few miles down the road from here. The first PA was medics coming back from Vietnam who had medical training and experience, and the concept was established by a visionary physician named Dr. Eugene Steed right here at Duke University. Since its inception, the profession has grown and flourished here in North Carolina. Currently, there are over 9,000 PAs providing care to patients in every medical setting. 10 more PA programs have joined the original one and attract some of the best and brightest future healthcare providers to our state and the ranks. This bill has been around a while. It was here last session. It passed unanimously. It is an agreement, or the Medical Society and the PA Association has worked out any differences. It really just modernizes the PA Act. I'm not aware of any opposition. There's a companion bill in the Senate, and we hope we can get this agreement this year so that we can get this bill passed to modernize the PA Act. Thank you for your support.
Further discussion or debate? If not, the question for the House, passage of House Bill 75 on second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. Clerk will open the vote. Following members wish to record. Representative Majeed, Representative Loftus. Loftus, aye. Loftus, aye. Clerk Clock Machine, record the vote. 115, having voted in the affirmative, none, the negative. House Bill 75 passes second reading without objection. Be read a third time.
The Assemblyman O'Connell next.
Question before the House, passage of House Bill 75 on third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. House Bill 75, having passed third reading, will be sent to the Senate. Ask our pages to please come forth, if we'd come down front. Also, on behalf of the gentleman from Mecklenburg, Representative Majeed, the chair is happy to extend the courtesies of the gallery to Charlotte Mayor Pro Tem Braxton Winston, who's with us. Mr. Winston, thanks for being with us today. If you would stand, please join me. Okay. Members, we have a group of pages who have been with us this week from the Tar Heel Challenge Academy. They've been doing a great job all week, and so this is our first day of, our only day of actual votes this week since there's been so much committee work. But want to make sure we properly welcome and introduce our pages. So we'd ask our pages, when you hear your name is called, please step forward so that my colleagues and I will know who each of you are and where you're from. Clerk, introduce the pages.
Pages of Stanley County, sponsor Speaker Moore. Kyle Brazier. Joel Harris. Madison Jacobs. Grayson Louder, Carlos Milan, Ashley Matute, Dean Perdue, Naheem Robinson Fields, Jonathan Torres, Caden Ward, Kalayan Woodard, Christina Young.
To our pages, I want to thank you for the work you've been doing this week for us and officially welcome you. I hope you're having a great experience and learning something about your government at the same time. We'd ask my colleagues to please join me in welcoming our pages with us this week. You may return to your post. Members, we have reached the end of our calendar for the day, and pursuant to the notice given earlier this week, there's not a need to have votes tomorrow, so there will be no recorded votes tomorrow, and so the next day of recorded votes at earliest would be Tuesday of next week, more than likely Wednesday, but we will advise members accordingly on that. Therefore, we'll go to notices and announcements. For what purpose does the gentleman from Lincoln, Representative Sain, rise?
Court announcement.
Gentleman has floor.
Members, we'd like to welcome each and every one of you to the Charlotte Regional Legislative Caucus. If you don't live in the region, we'd still welcome you. But the design of the caucus that Representative Carney and I have been working on to reconstitute here for the body, the mission is the Charlotte Regional Legislative Caucus will drive to promote policies that create a positive and nationally recognized business climate while simultaneously stimulating growth and investment for the Charlotte region. The caucus will conduct business with regional focus on economic development, transportation, and higher education. The objective is about discussing and advancing important issues central to the Charlotte region that maintain consistent pro-business, pro-region policies that ensure we are the best place to invest and conduct business. We welcome you to the caucus, Mr. Speaker. We appreciate you being a member of the caucus, and those in and around Charlotte will encourage you to attend our first meeting. We'll decide who will be the will conduct official business and elect our leadership. So welcome you to that. Look in your inboxes for a notice of the first meeting. Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Rowan, Representative Warren, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To make an announcement that
gentleman
the
gentleman has
for. Thank you. The State Government Committee will meet tomorrow morning. Please, there's one committee. Please attend.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Iredell, Representative McNeely, rise?
Point of personal privilege, please.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Being a proud and distinguished alumni of NC State, that's not debatable. That's not what we're doing here. I just want to do a shout out to our athletic program this past week. We had a good dominant. Nope. You got to have to hear this. You're going to have to hear it.
The gentleman's definitely out of order.
We with the domination we had of the Community College of Carrboro over there in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, our women's basketball team won, our men's wrestling won, our men's basketball team won, and then we had our hockey team win the other night, and then a fight broke out, and we won that too. And understand through the sports betting apps that are out there, we're a 3-point favorite in Tiddlywinks to beat them tomorrow. So go Pack.
After all that, I feel sorry for Iredell County this year. For what purpose does the lady from Forsyth, Representative Baker, rise?
Mr. Speaker, I have submitted a representative statement with the clerk. I ask that it be read in its entirety upon adjournment and spread across the journal, and would like to be recognized to speak to the statement.
Chair does direct that the representative statement be read in its entirety upon the adjournment and spread upon the journal, and the lady is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
You know, we oftentimes hear now with this younger generation that they don't have soft skills, that they're not dedicated, that they're not hard workers. You know, we've heard all of those things. But I stand before you today to recognize a young man that from pre-K through 12th grade had perfect attendance. Now he is entering his second year of college and has continued perfect attendance. So by my account, that's 14, 16 years of perfect attendance. And that's amazing. What he has also done has been committed to community service since 6 years of age. And so I thought it was befitting that we recognize young people who are doing amazing things and giving back to our community and really putting a face to the work that we're doing here and the decisions that we're making, and to also show him what it means to be a part of government and how we make government work and how we work through our philosophical differences. Sometimes we get what we want, sometimes we don't. So the statement reads as followed. Whereas Jeffrey Joshua Cloud, a native of Winston-Salem, is a special young man. He maintained a perfect attendance record from pre-kindergarten through 12th grade and graduated from Simon G. Atkins Academy and Technology High School as a member of the National Honor Society. And whereas Jeffrey Joshua Cloud attends the University of North Carolina Central University, where he is involved with the African American Male Initiative, voter engagement activities, and was voted as Mr. History. And whereas since the age of 6, Jeffrey Joshua Cloud has been an active participant in his community. And whereas Jeffrey Joshua Cloud was a member of the YMCA Black Achievers Program, during which he participated in a variety of volunteer activities. He volunteered with the Pan-Hellenic Council of Winston-Salem, helping other people eat, which is a HOPE acronym, organization of Winston-Salem, and the local Delta Sigma Theta sorority chapter. And whereas Jeffrey Joshua Cloud also served as a youth camp leader and volunteer basketball coach at the Carl Russell Community Center and served weekly at his church's food bank. Now, therefore, it is fitting to recognize Jeffrey Joshua Cloud for the service he has rendered to his community and the accomplishments he has made thus far. We are joined today with both Jeffrey and his mother, Deborah Barr Cloud, if they can stand at this time. And may we please recognize both mom and son. Thank you.
Thank you. No. For what purpose does...
No.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Forsyth, Representative Lambeth, rise?
For announcement.
Gentleman has the floor.
Budget process is on the fast track. It's moving along fast. Next week, we will be issuing the targets to the area chairs. Stay tuned for the time that you will get your targets. But we're working towards approval for the first week in April. I'll make sure that everybody keeps that week blocked so you're here. But know that good things are happening here in North Carolina, and financially I think we're in good shape, and we look forward to continuing to keep you updated on the budget.
For what purpose? Gentleman from Catawba, Representative Adams, rise.
Point of personal privilege.
Gentleman has floor.
Well, I just want to tell a little Adams family tale. Summer of 1963, I was in church with my mother and my father and my little sister when my mother suddenly keeled over. She kind of almost fainted. So my dad and I helped her get outside, and in the fresh air, she kind of got collected. And so we headed home. My dad traveled in those days, and we were worried about her. So next morning, he took her to the doctor, and they said they wanted to run some tests. Later in that week, they said, we're going to have a family meeting. And we did. And Mom and Dad announced that we were going to have a baby. I was 13 years old, and my sister was 11, and I was horrified. She was giddy. But anyway, they also said she was going to have surgery, and she did have to undergo major anesthesia. And in 1963, no amniocentesis. It was really kind of touch and go. But anyway, the result was positive. And I just want to wish my little brother a happy birthday, February 20th. But let me just add this to it. I also want to add that today is my little sister's daughter's birthday. We don't give out ages for ladies. And tomorrow is my son's, Lieutenant James Adams, it's his 27th birthday. So those June nights are really special to the Adams family. Thank you.
For what purpose, gentleman from Lincoln, Representative Sain, rise.
For a moment of personal privilege.
Gentleman has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I was so moved by Representative McNeely's remarks and just observing his suit. I really do want to say and extend a huge thank you for, even though the Spirit Halloween stores are pop-up stores and they close temporarily, that you're keeping the spirit alive till they come back. So thank you for that. I really appreciate that.
For what purpose does the lady from Cabarrus, Representative Staten Williams, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've submitted a representative statement with the clerk and I ask that it be read in its entirety upon adjournment and spread across the journal, and would like to be recognized to speak to the statement.
So ordered, and the lady is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
All right. The week of February 27th through March 5th, 2023 is Eating Disorders Awareness Week in North Carolina. The purpose of the week is to educate North Carolinians about and increase the public awareness of eating disorders and the availability of eating disorder support and interventions. Over 20 million women, 10 million men in the United States suffer from a clinically significant eating disorder at some point in their life. Clinically significant eating disorders affect people across all backgrounds and include anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, binge eating disorders, and other eating illnesses. Eating disorders are serious illnesses, not lifestyle choices, and have the second highest mortality rate of any mental illness. So upon that, I would like to read, whereas the goal of Eating Disorders Week is to shine a spotlight on eating disorders by educating the public, spreading a message of hope, and putting life-saving resources into the hands of those in need. Whereas eating disorders are serious illnesses that can be potentially life-threatening and have a great impact on a person's physical and emotional health. Whereas too often, signs and symptoms of eating disorders are overlooked, and many individuals, families, and communities are unaware of the devastating mental and physical consequences of eating disorders, as well as the pressures, attitudes, and behaviors which shape them. Whereas Eating Disorders Week is a collaborative effort consisting of eating disorders organizations, volunteers, including eating disorders professionals, healthcare providers, students, educators, social workers, and individuals like myself, committed to raising awareness of the danger surrounding eating disorders and the need for early intervention. Thank you.
Thank you. For what purpose does the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Cunningham, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Inquiry of the chair.
Please recognize.
Mr. Speaker, I was sitting back here wondering, are we doing spring break this year? I want to get clarity before I make my reservations.
We are. I believe we'll get that date. I believe it's the Easter Sunday, that week following. It's like Easter Sunday, Easter Monday. It would be that week of Easter Monday but we'll get that date. We've actually come to an agreement with the Senate, so whatever that date is, Mr. Cork, we'll get notice out on that.
Thank you, sir.
What purpose does the gentleman from Beaufort, Representative Kidwell, rise?
For an announcement and a point of personal privilege, Mr. Speaker.
Gentleman's recognized for both purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Finance Committee will meet at 8:30 a.m. tomorrow. In 6:43, please be prompt. We're going to have a class on what finance does. So, Representative Lambeth, if you want to spend some money, we got to go raise it first. So we look forward to that meeting tomorrow. On a point of personal privilege, Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen, I stand here today and recall August 30th of 2020 when my wife had a massive heart attack, landed in the hospital. I want to read you her medical report today, just a brief couple of sentences out of it. Seems to be in excellent condition, almost normalized. This is speaking of her heart, almost normalized with a 55% ejection fraction. Normal is 55 to 75. She's come a long way from her nearly deadly clinical course. I want to thank the people of this body for their prayers, my friends, the people out in the world, because there was hundreds, if not thousands, praying for her. And mostly, I want to thank God for my wonderful wife and her health.
Gentleman from Pitt, Representative Reeder, is recognized to send forth a representative statement that will be read in its entirety upon adjournment and spread across the journal. And at this time, is recognized to speak to a point of personal privilege.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to recognize a longtime friend of East Carolina University, Mr. Jeff Charles Pertee, the voice of the Pirates. Our longtime sports announcer died unexpectedly February 10th, while on a trip with the ECU basketball team. He was born in Ohio, but like me, found a home in the great state of North Carolina. Jeff began his broadcast career at ECU in 1988. For 35 years, he covered hundreds of football games, including 5 bowl games, and over 1,000 basketball games. He was named North Carolina Sportscaster of the Year twice, in 2000 and 2014. ECU has lost a great friend, supporter, and our voice. I ask a moment to pray for him and his family. Thank you very much.
For what purpose the lady from Durham, Representative Morey, rise?
Speak to a point of personal privilege.
Lady has the floor.
This will be very quick. Last year, I got a round of applause from my friends on the other side of the aisle, which I still hold dear in my heart because I said my mother, who was turning 102 last year, was a lifelong Republican, and everyone cheered. And I really appreciate it. But she went independent. So she will be starting her second year as an independent. But, no, be nice. She is celebrating her 103rd birthday on Friday. And thank you.
For what purpose, gentleman from Wake, Representative Jones, rise?
For a point of personal privilege, please.
Gentleman has the floor.
Since we're talking about family in here, I wasn't going to do this, and she's going to beat me up when she sees it, but my daughter, who's head of Art Space, right here in Raleigh, was recognized as one of the 8 young leaders in the Triangle by the News and Observer. It's a whole front page, full-length picture, and she's the girl on the left, the young lady on the left. So I just want to tell you that. Thank you.
Members, do we have any further notices or announcements? Well, seeing none, I just want to let everyone know I think we've had a very productive week, and we'll continue to try to keep the votes on one day to be mindful of members' schedules to be able to be in their district and handle matters there as much as possible. But again, and it appears we are getting good attendance at the committee meetings, so just would continue members to continue being diligent in attending the committees that are meeting on the other days. Seeing no other business to come before the body, the gentleman from Caldwell, Representative Hall, is recognized for motion.
Mr. Speaker, I move the House to now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, February 23rd at 10:30 a.m., subject to the standard stipulation set forth in Rule 15.1.
Representative Hall moves, seconded by Representative Dixon, that the House do now adjourn to reconvene Thursday, February 23rd at 10:30 a.m., subject to the standard stipulations set forth in Rule 15.1. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The House stands adjourned.
A representative statement recognizes National Engineers Week. Whereas engineers use their scientific skills and specialized knowledge in creating and innovative ways to fulfill society's needs to help organizations, communities adapt to new challenges and opportunities. And whereas engineers help solve major technological challenges of our time, from designing efficient building systems to rebuilding towns devastated by natural disasters. And whereas engineers has been called the invisible or stealth profession because things used every day, many things around us, roads, bridges, buildings, water systems, and energy have been engineered in some way. Yet we may not see the engineers behind the scenes or know much about engineering. And whereas engineers' technical expertise and analytical skills is essential for evaluating the feasibility, safety, and sustainability of purpose projects or policies. And whereas founded in 1951, National Engineers Week, E-Week, is dedicated to ensuring a diverse and well-educated future engineering workforce by increasing understanding of and interest in engineering and technology careers. And whereas E-Week is a formal coalition of more than 70 engineering education cultural societies and more than 50 corporations and government agencies dedicated in raising public awareness of engineering positive contributions to quality of life. And whereas E-Week promotes recognition among parents, teachers, and students of the importance of technical education at a high level of math, science, technology, literacy, and motivates youth to pursue engineering careers in order to provide a diverse and vigorous engineering workforce. And whereas North Carolina colleges and universities are leading the way with incredible engineering programs at North Carolina Agriculture and Technical State College, the University of North Carolina at Charlotte, North Carolina State University, Campbell University, Western Carolina University, Wake Forest University, East Carolina University, Methodist University, and Elon University. And whereas the American Society of Heating, Refrigerating, and Air Conditioning Engineers set standards for heating, ventilation, air conditioning, and refrigeration industry, in addition to certifying that they're educating people in the industry of all across the country. And whereas this year marks the 100th year anniversary of North Carolina Board of Examiners of Engineers and Surveys and the 100th year of college engineering at North Carolina State University, as well as the retirement of Dr. Lewis Martin Vega, Dean of Engineering at North Carolina State University. Now, therefore, it is fitting to observe February 19th through 25th, 2023, as National Engineering Week. Acknowledge the 100th anniversary of the North Carolina Board of Examiners for Engineers and Surveyors and College of Engineers at North Carolina State University, and congratulate Dr. Lewis Martin Vega on his retirement as the Dean of Engineering at North Carolina State University. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies that the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on the 22nd day of February 2023, submitted by Representative Dean Arp, James White, Principal Clerk. A representative statement honoring Jeff Charles Purtee, former East Carolina University broadcaster. Whereas Jeff Charles Purtee, who was known as Voice of the Pirates, passed away unexpectedly on February 10th, 2023 in New Orleans while accompanying the men's basketball team. And whereas Jeff Charles, a native of Piqua, Ohio, received a degree in speech communications from Gresham College in Indiana and graduated from the Career Academy of Broadcasting School of Columbus in Ohio. And whereas Jeffrey Charles spent time as a sports director at WSB in Atlanta, where he was a nighttime host of a sports talk show that was heard in 38 states and Canada. And whereas in 1988, Jeff Charles began a radio career in East Carolina University after having served in a similar position at the University of Illinois, Furman University, and Virginia Tech. And whereas Jeff Charles served as a broadcaster for the Pirates for almost 35 years, calling some of ECU's most unforgettable football and basketball games, including 15 bowl games and over 1,000 basketball games. And whereas Jeff Charles was named the North Carolina Sportscaster of the Year, honors from National Sportscasters and Sports Writers Association 2000 and 2014, and recognized as an honorary alumnus of East Carolina University in 2015. Now, therefore, it is fitting to honor the life and memory of Jeff Charles Purtee, the Voice of the Pirates, and to express appreciation for his contribution to East Carolina University Athletics Department for nearly 35 years. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies that the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the journal on the 22nd day of February 2023, submitted by Representative Reader, James White, Principal Clerk. A representative statement observing Eating Disorders Awareness Week. Whereas the goal of Eating Disorders Awareness Week is to shine a spotlight on eating disorders by educating the public, spreading a message of hope, and putting life-saving resources into the hands of those who need. And whereas eating disorder is a serious condition that is potentially life-threatening and have a great impact on a person's physical and emotional health. And whereas too often signs and symptoms of eating disorder are overlooked, and many individuals, families, and communities are unaware of the devastating mental and physical consequence of eating disorder, as well as pressures, attitude, and behaviors which shape them. And whereas in the United States, 20 million women and 10 million men suffer from clinically sufficient eating disorder,
at some point of their lives. And whereas clinically significant eating disorder affect people across the backgrounds and include anorexia nervosa, bulimia nervosa, and binge eating disorders. And whereas the 2023 theme of Eating Disorder Awareness Week is At a Time for Change, which focuses on the message that it's now at a time for more equity, inclusion, access, outreach, early intervention, education, representation, advocacy, and awareness. And whereas Eating Disorder Awareness Week is a collaboration effort assisting the Eating Disorders Organization volunteers, including eating disorder professionals, healthcare providers, students, educators, social workers, individuals committed to raising awareness of the dangers of surrounding eating disorders and the need for early intervention and treatment access. And whereas eating disorders are serious illness, not lifestyle choices, and they have second highest mortality rate of any mental illness. And whereas many cases of eating disorder go undetected, and less than one-third of young people with eating disorders will receive proper treatment. And whereas eating disorder experts have found that prompt intensive treatment signify improved the chances of recovery. And whereas it is important for educators, medical providers, parents, and community members to be aware of the warning signs of symptoms of eating disorders. And whereas Eating Disorders Awareness Week will encourage people to share their stories and experiences with disorders of eating by body image struggles and highlight the importance of screening for early detection and intervention. And whereas Eating Disorder Awareness Week will also dispel myths and present eating disorders as a public issue and indiscriminately affects many people without regard for age, gender, ethnicity, size, or background. And whereas it is important to recognize the vital role of Eating Disorder Awareness Week serves increasing public and media attention regarding the seriousness of eating disorders and the biological and environmental causes of eating disorders, as well as increasing public knowledge of how to help individuals who are struggling with these debilitating diseases. Now, therefore, it is fitting to observe February 27th through March the 5th, 2023, as Eating Disorder Awareness Week. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies the following statement, read in the House and placed upon the journal on the 22nd day of February 2023, submitted by Representative Staten Williams, James White, Principal Clerk. A representative statement recognizing Jeffrey Joshua Cloud. Whereas Jeffrey Joshua Cloud, at age of Winston-Salem, is a special young man. He maintained a perfect attendance record from kindergarten through 12th grade and graduated from Simon G. Atkins Academic and Technology High School as a member of the National Honor Society. And whereas Jeffrey Joshua Cloud attended the University of North Carolina Central University, where he is involved in an African American male initiative, voter engagement activities, and voted as Mr. History. And whereas since the age of 6, Jeffrey Joshua Cloud has been an active participant in his community. And whereas Jeffrey Joshua Cloud was a member of the YMCA, Black Achievers Program, during which time he participated in a variety of volunteer activities. He volunteered with the Pan Hellenic Council in Winston-Salem, Helping Other People Eat organization of Winston-Salem and the local Delta Sigma Theta sorority chapter. And whereas Jeffrey Joshua McLeod also served as a youth camp leader and volunteer basketball coach at the Carol Russell Community Center and served weekly as a church food bank. Now, therefore, it is fitting to recognize Jeffrey Joshua Cloud for the service He has rendered to his community and to the accomplishments he has made as a student. In witness whereof, the undersigned certifies the foregoing statement was read in the House and placed upon the Journal on the 22nd day of February, 2023, submitted by Representative Amber Baker, James White, Principal Clerk.